what China's lockdowns could mean for the U.S. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. The economy of China expanded 4.8% in the first 3 months of this year, beating the expectations of many an analyst. But as the country grapples with COVID outbreaks and severe lockdowns, there could be more hidden problems to come with implications for the U.S. Our China correspondent Jennifer Pak has more from Shanghai.
If you compare the first 3 months of this year to the previous quarter, China's economy only grew 1.3%. The Ukraine war has driven up commodity prices, but the biggest concern is China's COVID rules. In March, the high-tech hub of Shenzhen, the northeastern province of Jilin, and Shanghai all went into lockdown. Other cities are following with their own restrictions. Worryingly, the usual e-commerce and delivery systems are broken within Shanghai. That means logistics and manufacturing in the rest of the country are affected too. For American consumers, they can expect products to cost more. For U.S. businesses, they might not be able to rely so much on Chinese consumers because many are locked in their homes and not buying. China's goal of reaching 5.5% growth this year seems far out of reach. In Shanghai, under lockdown, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
On to the latest in the saga over the future of Twitter, which the world's richest man Elon Musk has said he wants to take over. On Friday, Twitter's board unanimously adopted what is called a poison pill as a way to fend off his $43 billion bid. A poison pill is basically a threat to issue tons of discounted new shares to anyone but Elon Musk, diluting his control and making it a lot more expensive for him to take over the company. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more.
Poison pills are designed to make hostile takeover bids much less attractive. Basically, they limit the percentage of a company an aggressor can take control of by watering down the values of the shares. Also known as shareholder rights plans, they were popular in the early 80s and into the mid-90s. They were seen as a cheap insurance policy for corporate boards, but eventually there was a backlash. Poison pills started to be seen more as a way for board members to protect their jobs and perhaps not the best thing for regular shareholders. By the early 2000s, many companies started dumping their poison pills. These days, DealPoint data says less than 2% of publicly traded U.S. companies have them in place. But as Twitter showed, poison pills are still a thing. Other examples from recent years, 10 years ago, Netflix fended off Carl Icahn, and in 2018, Papa John's adopted a poison pill to keep its founder at bay. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 2-6% range. Dow futures down 81 points. 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.866%. The U.S. is in a battle with rising prices. Consumers are frustrated. The Federal Reserve is trying to squeeze the excess inflation out of the economy by raising interest rates and putting pressure on securities markets. But how well do we, consumers, understand this experience we are all going through? Robert Rich, director of the Center for Inflation Research and a senior economic and policy advisor at the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, joins us. Good morning.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
What do you think people most misunderstand about inflation?
One of the biggest misconceptions actually is just actually what inflation means. I think when people see the price of an item moving up, then they think that that's inflation. And inflation really shouldn't be associated with the price of a single item moving higher, such as gas or food. When we think about inflation, it really refers to a situation where price increases are broad-based and sustained. So I think it's really important to think of inflation in terms of a wide range of prices, you know, that are not experiencing one-time increases, but instead will continue to rise on an ongoing basis.
When we talk about inflation, we often talk about core inflation, where, you know, you take out food and energy. But, I mean, food and energy are still obviously very important to people and are a major expense for most people. So does that ever get overlooked when the Fed takes a look at inflation?
So this is actually a really important issue, and I'm glad you asked. I think that the best way to explain the use of measures of inflation that exclude the prices of certain items, like food and energy, this core measure you're talking about, is that they really serve as a means to an end. I mean, food and energy prices can be volatile and mask the part of inflation that's expected to persist going forward. And so by excluding food and energy prices, it really provides a better signal of how much of the current inflation reading is expected to last.
Do you think we are at the peak of inflation now? Have we reached it?
Well, that's a tough call. I think that there are, you know, reasons to believe we might be at that peak. There was a recent CPI report that suggested that goods inflation, which had been the principal driver for inflation sort of over the last year, there's some initial evidence to suggest that that might be slowing. But obviously, you know, as soon as we think that inflation may be slowing or peak, you then have these unexpected events take place. You know, the Russia-Ukraine conflict broke out. Now we've had these significant lockdowns in China that have taken place. So I think it's very difficult to say anything about whether, you know, we're definitively at a peak or not.
We talked about some things that, you know, people have gotten wrong about inflation or misconceptions about inflation. What has the Fed gotten wrong about inflation this time around?
Well, I think that when we first started seeing the rise in inflation about a year ago, there was a general view that the rise was going to be sort of temporary, transitory. What ended up happening is that there sort of had been a confluence of factors that have caused inflation to end up being much higher and to be much more persistent than what we were expecting. Mm-hmm.
Robert Rich is the director of the Center for Inflation Research and a senior economic policy advisor at the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you again for the opportunity to speak. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Just looked up Twitter shares, by the way. They're up 3.59% in pre-market trading. I guess people were not super excited about Elon's plan. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.